In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, let's talk movies. So it's every Monday we do this thing. Alan Adams from The Main Edge right here in studio with us. Pass the Popcorn brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan, welcome, my friend. Good
Hello.
To see you.
Hello. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I enjoyed seeing you yesterday. But just under the wire, I got to see the final performance of The Graduate at Penobscot Theater. I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, no, it was a nice surprise to see you out there. I'm glad you were able to make it. I'm glad you dug it. We had fun. People worked really hard. I thought there were some really wonderful things about the production. And if I'm being real about it, I'm kind of glad I've got my evenings free.
Well,
again.
I bet you are. But you did outstanding work as always. As the what was your official title at the Taft Hotel? concierge.
Concierge. I think is probably where we're at.
Wonderful bartender, strip club operator.
Yes.
And then a very flustered reverend there. Good to see you as a man of the cloth.
Well, and it was fun, too, because you got to see something particularly special on Sunday night because I shaved my mustache at intermission.
Which I didn't even know.
Because I had grown out the mustache for the part, and I was like, I was gonna lose it at the end of the show anyway. And so we were talking about it before the show started, and it was just like, well, why don't you shave it at intermission? And I'm like, you know, why don't I do that?
Brilliant.
Yeah, and it was fantastic. It was super fun, and I did that, and it was a fun little sort of button on the entire experience. Mm-hmm. Like I'm super glad that that Barry asked me to do it. I really had a really good time working with really what was a phenomenal group of people, both on and behind the stage, and so it was great. I'm looking forward to having the occasional evening at home, although the way things are looking, I'm not going to have a ton of those anyway. So we'll see how it goes.
I will say the only thing that I have nightmares about is our friend Arthur Morrison swinging around an axe.
Yeah, no, he really goes for it with that axe. It's pretty great.
In the midst of all that, closing weekend, you still got to see a couple of movies this week. I want to save the best for last.
So okay.
So let's start with The House with the Clock on Its Walls,
okay,
which apparently I hear Colin Fleming doesn't like, because tomorrow we're talking with him about young adult fiction, and he loves the book, but he's not a big fan of the film, but you liked it, okay.
I did, and I'm not familiar with the book, so I can't speak to that, although I have heard a lot of talk about how the sort of more gothic elements of the book, which again, was written in 1973, by a gentleman, I believe his name is John Bellairs, illustrated by the wonderful Edward Gorey.
Oh wow!
So I mean, it's got some legit like YA cred, but those sort of more gothic elements were replaced with what I've taken to referring to as it's been sort of Amblinified, as in Spielberg's Amblin Entertainment, because the movie has a very throwback kind of feel to it. Throwback to the sort of mid 1980s you call them kids movies because they're for a young audience, but there's not nearly the degree of middle of the road waffling or condescension that you get with a lot of kid oriented fare these days. I think a lot of that springs from the value of the source material. I think a lot of that springs from the fact that Spielberg was involved. This is an Amblin Entertainment movie. I think a lot of it springs from the quality of the cast. And maybe the biggest surprise of all, the movie's directed by Eli Roth.
Saw?
Like Hostel and like this guy who made his bones with torture porn and gore and various like brutal, bloody sort of genre exploitation type movies. So I'm like, well, what the hell is Eli Roth going to do with a kids movie? Turns out quite a lot. Like it's actually a remarkably strong sort of marriage of director and material that I wasn't even expecting in the slightest. So that's pretty great. The movie itself, it's set in 1955. A young man by the name of Lewis, played by Owen Vaccaro, his parents pass away in a car accident, and so he is sent to the town of New Zebedee, Michigan, to live with his sort of black sheep uncle, Jonathan, played by Jack Black. So he goes to town and winds up in his uncle's like ramshackle old creaky spooky house, where he rapidly discovers that Uncle Jonathan is a warlock. He's not a very good one, but he is a warlock. He can do magic, as can his next door neighbor, the much more capable and talented Florence Zimmerman, played by Cate Blanchett. Right, that's what I'm saying. And so you know, he sort of you know, learns about this sort of magic stuff, and his uncle agrees to sort of start teaching him some things. But as he lives in this house, he starts to realize that, you know, something's not quite right. He sees his uncle sort of creeping around late at night looking for something, you know, that's ill-defined, and no one's really explaining it to him. Meanwhile, he's struggling to fit in at school, and the one kid who deigns to be his friend, Lewis, in an effort to impress him, basically is like, magic's real. And, you know, and swipes his uncle's necromancy book, and they go and decide to, he's like, I'm gonna raise the dead, which goes about as well as you would anticipate.
Seems like a bad idea.
And the dead raised turns out to be a gentleman by the name of Isaac Izzard, played by Kyle MacLachlan,
inspired casting.
Yep. The previous owner of Jonathan's house, also his former magic act partner. And apparently an evil magician who has built a clock that is contained within the house. Said clock, when it is wound and strikes the proper hour, will basically bring about the end of life as we know it. And so we're left with Lewis, Jonathan, and Florence struggling to figure out a way to stop the back from the dead Isaac and all of his evil magic powers from destroying the world.
Wow.
It's super fun. And it's one of those movies where it's, again, clearly for kids, but it doesn't really pull punches the way kids movies kind of do. There are some genuinely like scary bits in here. And I have to think that's coming from Eli Roth. I suppose at some point, you know, they're watching the dailies and Spielberg kind of leans over and is like, okay, so maybe dial back the blood a little bit, Eli. I like where you're going. I like the shape of what we've got here. Yeah. But let's maybe pull out the gore aspect of it. But yeah, it's got a wonderful creepiness to it. There are a couple of scenes that are like out and out creepy in a way that is a lot of fun. And they do a great deal of storytelling. Jack Black is great. This is exactly the sort of movie he needs to be making, and it's balanced wonderfully by Cate Blanchett, who is 100% bought in. Like, one of the things I love about her is no matter what she's doing, you never get that "I'm too good to be here" kind of vibe from her. Which, considering her talent, like, you could certainly see with something like this.
Sure.
You know, Kyle MacLachlan gnaws his way through the scenery in a couple of his scenes, and it's great. And there are a couple of moments that are not just scary, like in terms of like, you know, magic is scary, but like sort of real world scary in a way that I'm not going to spoil. And it's a blink if you'll miss it, and you'll miss it kind of moment. But one that really sort of addresses some of the real life bleakness of the time in which this movie is set. So. Yeah, it's a super fun movie. Also, a little fun fact, local connection. BSO music director and conductor Lucas Richmond conducted the score, the orchestra that performed the score for this movie.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, like, so that's just a nice little connection here to the city of Bangor. The music's great, along with everything else. Like, it's a really fun movie.
All right. Now let's get to the fun one. I mean, not that wasn't enjoyable, but I enjoy it so much when you really do not like a movie. And I'm even happier that you don't like a movie that I don't think I'll like, because I wanted to punch my TV when I saw the trailer for Life Itself.
Yes, Life Itself. Look, I'm not someone who is averse to having my emotions manipulated at the movies. Like, we go to the movies to feel things, whether it's joy or sadness or what have you. Like, that's fine. I don't mind. The medium is inherently manipulative. That's how it works. And that's fine. You can push my buttons, but you gotta earn it. Like, you gotta earn the right to push those buttons. Because if you don't, all you have is something that's super shallow and totally unsatisfying. And when we're constantly aware of that button pushing, like, it all feels super cynical. And that's exactly the experience of seeing life itself. It's written and directed by Dan Fogelman, who's best known for creating This Is Us. As far as I can tell, I haven't actually watched the show. This is pretty much This Is Us, the movie, in all the worst kind of ways. I mean, it's totally shameless in its willingness to do literally whatever it takes to elicit the emotional response that they're looking for. I mean, it's unpleasantly direct in the way it does it, and it's like everything can be boiled down to like just like following like these rote instructions in a manual for making a movie to make people get weepy. And there's no narrative direction. Like, the stories don't really make any sense. The performances are lackluster. You know, all it has is this weird, like, borderline gleeful hammering on those emotional buttons. It's a bunch of interconnected stories that are being told, although none of them really are particularly well constructed or coherent. Basically, they all revolve around, spoiler alert, and I usually don't do this, but I'm totally going to, because this movie was 11th at the box office in its opening weekend. It barely made $2 million, so nobody's going to go see it anyway. The central plot point in this movie is Olivia Wilde getting hit by a bus. Like, that's what this entire movie revolves around. There are four different storylines, and each one of them springs from the fact that a very pregnant Olivia Wilde gets hit by a bus.
Hence the title of your review in this week's Main Edge, which I love more than a little.
This Is Bus. I don't ordinarily take too much self-celebratory pride and stuff like that, but every once in a while one comes along and I'm like, oh yes, I'm a brain genius is what I am. So I'll give you the storylines, even though honestly it doesn't really matter. The first one is Oscar Isaac, who plays a guy named Will, who's struggling with the loss of his wife, Abby, the aforementioned Olivia Wilde. He's in therapy, court-ordered therapy with a therapist played by Annette Bening, who's far too good to be here. we're initially led to believe that he's lost her in that she's left him. And then it becomes very clear, oh, no, she got hit by a bus, Rich.
I've heard that.
She got hit by a bus. it's shocking in the moment, and then we find out that we're gonna experience this Olivia Wilde getting hit by a bus thing more than once, because the next story is the grown-up daughter of Will and Abby, the Oscar Isaac and Olivia Wilde, living with her with his parents, her grandparents. Played by Jean Smart and Mandy Patinkin, who again are too good to be here. And she's a rebel, and she's like, you know, she's struggling to deal with the aftermath, like, even, you know, decades later of, you know, having lost her parents and dealing with living with her grandpa and her grandmother and all that stuff. Death is a part of her life, and blah 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 blah. And then it's off to the Spanish countryside.
What?
Why do we go to the Spanish countryside? Because there was a little Spanish boy on the bus that saw Olivia Wilde get hit. And he's on vacation with his parents, who both work for the mysterious Mr. Sassione in his olive groves in Andalusia. Mr. Sassione, played by Antonio Banderas, because of course Antonio Banderas is here.
Oh, Lord.
So the little boy grows up to be, you know, a man who is... you know, who's been sort of spoiled by the wealthy Mr. Sacchione, and he winds up going to college NYU. He goes to NYU.
Sure.
You know, because, why wouldn't you want to go back to the scene of your greatest childhood trauma to study, I don't know.
Bus driving.
Yeah. Business administration or whatever. And then, you know, so he goes home after being raised by his parents, who are struggling with their own relationship and their relationship with the aforementioned Mr. Sassione. And then he's in New York, and wouldn't you know it, he crosses paths with people from that tragic event from his past, you know, all those many years ago. And it all comes together in a way that is ridiculous and completely unbelievable and frustrating in just about every possible way.
This is for you, Alan. And for the little Spanish boy. For all the survivors.
But honestly, like, Olivia Wilde gets hit by a bus, like, you see it like six times. You see, it's like half a dozen times you get to watch her get hit by a bus, and it's the most, it's, you know, it's tragic and shocking the first time, at law of diminishing returns, and then by the sixth time you're laughing. It's like, oh my God, she's gonna get hit by the bus again.
The magic bus. That's hysterical.
The magic bus. It's magic because it makes me sad that I'm at the movies. Like, it makes me regret every choice that I've made to get to that point. And it's like, oh, I know what you're doing, Dan Fogelman. I know what you're doing every step of the way. You're cynically trying to manipulate my emotions, and I'm a soft touch when it comes to that stuff. And I shed nary a tear because, you know what? Screw you, Dan Fogelman.
There you go. The magic bus not coming for Alan this time around. Life itself. Make sure you read Alan's review this week in The Man Edge and get even more of that.
Oh, it's trash. Just trash.
Thank you, Alan.
Save your money and stay at home and listen to The Who.
Yes, you'll have a much better time, guaranteed.
Yeah, and you don't have to listen to it six times. Once will be enough.
Right, you just listen to it once, and at the end, you know what? If you want to, you know, if you want to just watch Olivia Wilde get hit by something, I mean, I don't know, like, well, you've got bigger problems, I suppose.
There you go. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
We'll see you on Wednesday.